A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Picture a flag. Any national flag. I'm willing to bet good money you pictured a rectangle. Probably wider than it is tall. Maybe 2x3, maybe 1x2. Now here's the thing. One country on Earth, just one, looked at that rectangle and said, "No thank you." Nepal's flag is two stacked triangular pennants, and it is the only national flag that isn't a quadrilateral. In 2024, someone proposed adding Nepal's flag to the emoji keyboard as an actual non-rectangular emoji, and the Unicode Consortium had to seriously wrestle with whether their entire flag emoji system could handle a shape that didn't fit the box. So the question we're digging into today, how did we get here? How did flags go from wildly varied battlefield standards to a planet full of nearly identical rectangles? And what does Nepal's stubborn exception tell us about who actually gets to design the visual language of statehood?
This is one of those questions where the answer is way weirder than most people assume. Because flags feel ancient, right? They feel like they've always been around, always been rectangular, always been these neat color block symbols of national identity. But the modern national flag is shockingly recent. Most of the flags we recognize today were adopted in the 19th or 20th century. The field that studies them, vexillology, didn't even get its name until 1957, when Whitney Smith coined the term.
From the Latin vexillum.
Which was the Roman military standard, a square piece of cloth hung from a horizontal crossbar on a pole. Not a rectangle, not even flown the way we think of flags being flown. And that's the starting point for this whole story. Before flags were about nations, they were about visibility on a battlefield. They were functional military technology, not abstract identity symbols.
The rectangle wasn't some aesthetic choice handed down from the flag gods. It was an engineering decision.
And a slow one. Let's go back to what flags actually were before the rectangle took over. The Roman vexillum, as I mentioned, was square, hung vertically from a crossbar. Chinese military banners were often swallow-tailed or triangular, designed to stream dramatically in the wind so they'd catch the eye from a distance. Medieval European standards were these long, tapering shapes, sometimes several meters in length, covered in heraldic devices, coats of arms, saint imagery. The shape varied enormously depending on who was carrying it, what rank they held, what region they were from, and what practical purpose the flag served.
If I'm a medieval knight and I'm charging into battle, my flag isn't telling people which country I represent. It's telling them who I am personally.
Or which lord you serve. It was a personal or feudal identifier, not a national one. The heraldic revolution of the 12th through 15th centuries actually standardized the symbols. Coats of arms became formalized, passed down through families, recorded in rolls of arms. But it did not standardize the shape of the cloth those symbols appeared on. A knight's personal banner might be square, a unit's battle standard might be a long tapering pennon, and a king's royal standard might be something else entirely. Shape was a function of context, not a fixed rule.
I love that. The symbols got standardized before the thing they were printed on did. It's like standardizing fonts before standardizing paper sizes.
That's exactly the right analogy. And the paper size analogy is actually perfect, because what eventually drove flag shape standardization was something very similar to what drove paper size standardization, mass production, and specifically maritime needs. This is where things get concrete. If you're on land, waving a flag around, the shape matters less because you're relatively close to the people who need to see it. But at sea, you need to identify a vessel's nationality from miles away, often through fog, smoke, or partial visibility. The flag has to be recognizable even when it's half furled, even when there's no wind, even when it's tattered at the edges. Maritime flags became the first real standardization pressure, and the 17th century is when we see the first serious codification.
Give me a date. I want a date.
1634. The British Admiralty issued regulations that specified exact flag sizes for ships of different rates. A first-rate ship of the line flew a larger ensign than a sixth-rate frigate. The aspect ratios were standardized. rectangular with clear color fields, because a rectangle is the shape that provides the most consistent visible surface area across different wind conditions. It's also the easiest shape to cut from a bolt of fabric, the easiest to hem with straight seams, and the easiest to fold and store in a ship's locker.
The Red Ensign, the Dutch Prinsenvlag, the French naval flags, these all converged on rectangles around the same time.
The Dutch Prinsenvlag, the orange-white-blue tricolor that later became the red-white-blue flag of the Netherlands, was one of the earliest national maritime flags, and it was rectangular. The British Red Ensign, the blue field with the Union Jack and the Canton, and a red field, rectangular. These became templates. And here's the thing about maritime power in the 17th and 18th centuries. It was global. European ships carried their rectangular flags to every continent, and those flags became the visual shorthand for state authority in ports, colonies, and trade routes worldwide.
The rectangle won at sea, and then sea power projected that rectangle onto land.
Yes, but there's another layer. The Napoleonic Wars at the turn of the 19th century were the moment when armies became truly massive. Napoleon's Grande Armée was hundreds of thousands of men. You needed flags for all those units, and you needed them fast, cheap, and consistent. Rectangles are easier to mass produce than any other shape. Straight cuts, straight seams, no complex geometry. A regimental flag factory could churn out rectangles at speed. Irregular shapes waste fabric and require skilled labor.
The rectangle is the cheapest, most durable shape to manufacture at scale. That's not a romantic origin story, but it's the truth.
It's absolutely the truth. And 1806 is a key date. The Prussian military issued flag regulations that specified exact dimensions for the first time, not just shape, but precise measurements. This was military bureaucracy meeting industrial production, and the rectangle was the only shape that made sense for both.
We've got two forces converging, maritime visibility and industrial mass production, both pointing to the same shape.
Then comes the big one, 1794, the French tricolor.
The flag that launched 1,000 rectangles.
It really did. The French Revolution didn't just produce a new flag, it produced the idea that a flag could represent a nation rather than a monarch. The tricolor was explicitly designed as a rectangle with a 2-to-3 ratio. Blue, white, red, vertical stripes of equal width. It was simple. It was reproducible. It was legible from a distance, and it was ideologically legible too. The colors represented liberty, equality, fraternity, or Paris flanked by the colors of the king, depending on which version of the story you prefer. The point is, it was a deliberate design for a new kind of political entity. And when France went on to conquer half of Europe under Napoleon, that rectangular tricolor became the model for what a modern flag should look like.
The French 2-to-3 ratio became the de facto European standard, and then Europe exported it everywhere.
The 19th century was a flag explosion. Newly independent nations in Latin America, Argentina, Chile, Peru, Gran Colombia, all adopted flags, and they were all rectangles. The 1848 revolutions across Europe produced a wave of tricolors. The German black-red-gold, the Italian green-white-red, all rectangles. Because the rectangle signaled modernity, it signaled order, rationality, statehood. It was the opposite of the irregular, feudal, pre-modern shapes that had come before.
There's something almost brutal about that. The rectangle as a civilizational flex.
It gets more explicit in the colonial context. European imperial powers imposed rectangular flags on their colonies. The British blue ensign with a colonial badge, the French tricolor with a local symbol in the canton. When those colonies gained independence in the mid-20th century, they almost universally adopted new rectangular flags. Guinea in 1958, Nigeria in 1960. Rectangles, often with explicit aspect ratio specifications written into their founding constitutions. The rectangle had become the visual grammar of legitimate statehood.
If you wanted to be taken seriously as a nation, you spoke that grammar.
And this is where the United Nations comes in as the great standardizer. The UN flag, adopted in 1945, is a 2-to-3 rectangle, a light blue field with a white map of the world surrounded by olive branches. The UN flag code of 1947 recommended a 2-to-3 aspect ratio for member state flags. It wasn't mandatory, but it was a powerful nudge. And then the UN started publishing its flag chart, first edition in 1950, updated regularly through 2020, showing all the member state flags lined up in neat rows. 193 rectangles and Nepal. That chart became the reference for flag manufacturers worldwide. If you're a flag factory in China or Bangladesh or the United States, you look at the UN chart and you see rectangles. Your machinery is set up for rectangles. Your fabric bolts are cut for rectangles. The entire global supply chain for flags is optimized for rectangles. Nepal's flag is essentially a manufacturing anomaly that the system tolerates.
Let's talk about Nepal's flag, because it's not just non-rectangular, it's mathematically unique. I want you to walk me through this.
This is genuinely one of my favorite things in all of vexillology. Nepal's flag is a double pennant shape, two triangular pennants stacked on top of each other. The shape dates back to the 19th century, when two competing Nepalese factions each used a single triangular pennant. When the Rana dynasty consolidated power, they combined the two pennants into a single flag, and that shape was codified in the 1962 Constitution.
The Constitution doesn't just say it's two triangles. It defines the flag's construction mathematically.
23 steps. It's a geometric construction process involving a compass and straight edge. The Constitution specifies exact proportions for every element, the width of the blue border, the placement of the sun and moon emblems, the angles of the pennants. You cannot describe Nepal's flag by saying it's 2 to 3 or 1 to 2. You have to follow a 23-step algorithm. It is literally the only national flag in the world defined by a mathematical construction rather than a simple aspect ratio.
That's absurd and magnificent.
It encodes meaning. The two pennants represent the Himalayas. The sun and moon represent the Shah and Rana dynasties, and they also symbolize the Hindu cosmology of eternal celestial bodies, the idea that Nepal will last as long as the sun and moon endure. The crimson red is the national color. The blue border represents peace. Every element is deliberate, and the shape itself is the most deliberate element of all. Nepal couldn't just adopt a rectangle because a rectangle would erase the specific historical and cosmological meaning embedded in the double pennant shape.
It's not a quirky design choice. It's a constitutional commitment to a specific visual identity that predates the global rectangular standard.
That's why attempts to simplify or standardize Nepal's flag have always failed. In the 1990s, there was a brief push to adopt a rectangular version for easier manufacturing, and it was met with overwhelming public opposition. The shape isn't negotiable because the shape is the meaning.
Which brings us to Whitney Smith, the father of American vexillology. His 1975 book, Flags Through the Ages and Across the World, became the standard reference, and it implicitly normalized the rectangle as the default flag shape. His famous principles of good flag design: keep it simple, use meaningful symbolism, 2 to 3 basic colors, no lettering or seals, be distinctive. All of those assume a rectangular field.
Smith's principles are useful for designing a flag that works visually. Simple color blocks, bold geometric shapes, high contrast. These are the things that make a flag legible from a distance, in wind, at small sizes. But they're also culturally specific. They emerge from a Western vexillological tradition that had already spent 2 centuries converging on the rectangle as the default. Smith wasn't imposing the rectangle, he was describing what had already become the norm.
By describing it, he reinforced it.
And that's not a criticism of Smith. He was doing what any good scholar does, which is articulating the principles that seem to work. But it does mean that when we teach vexillology today, we're teaching a set of design principles that assume a rectangular canvas. A student learning flag design from Smith's principles would never think to design a non-rectangular flag, because the principles don't account for that possibility.
The rectangle is baked into the pedagogy. It's baked into the manufacturing. It's baked into the UN chart. It's baked into the emoji keyboard. The emoji thing is worth dwelling on, actually. Every flag emoji is a rectangle. Even the Nepal's flag emoji is currently displayed as a rectangle with the double pennant design inside it, because the Unicode standard for flag emojis assumes a rectangular glyph.
That 2024 Unicode proposal you mentioned at the top, it's significant. The proposal asks for a variation selector that would allow Nepal's flag to be rendered as a non-rectangular emoji. If it's accepted, it would be the first non-rectangular flag emoji in the Unicode standard. That might sound trivial, but it's not. Emojis are how hundreds of millions of people encounter flags daily. The fact that every flag emoji is a rectangle reinforces the idea that flags are rectangles. Nepal's emoji being rectangular is a tiny act of digital erasure.
The Unicode Consortium is effectively enforcing a global flag shape norm, whether they intend to or not.
They're aware of this. The debate around the Nepal proposal isn't just technical, it's political. Some members argue that Unicode shouldn't be in the business of standardizing flag shapes, that it should represent flags as they actually are. Others argue that the technical complexity of non-rectangular glyphs creates rendering problems across different platforms and devices. It's the same tension between uniqueness and standardization that we've been tracing through the entire history of flags.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. Why does any of this matter? Flags are rectangles. That's fine. They're practical. They fly well. They print well. They look good on poles. Why should we care that one country has a weird-shaped flag?
I think it matters because the rectangle isn't neutral. It's the visual language of a specific political order. The Westphalian nation-state system, European maritime dominance, industrial mass production, and post-colonial nation-building. When every flag is a rectangle, the rectangle becomes invisible. It becomes the unmarked default, the natural shape, the way flags just are. And that invisibility is a form of soft power. It makes the historical choices that produce the rectangle disappear, so that alternatives seem not just unusual, but illegitimate.
The rectangle as cultural imperialism in flag design.
I'd phrase it more carefully than that, but yes. The rectangle was imposed globally through colonialism, through the UN system, through manufacturing supply chains, through design education. It wasn't a neutral consensus. It was a standard that emerged from specific historical conditions and then was universalized. Nepal's flag is a reminder that there are other ways to do this.
Which makes me wonder, could a new nation today adopt a non-rectangular flag and be taken seriously?
That's a fascinating question. South Sudan, which became independent in 2011, adopted a rectangular flag, 1-to-2 ratio, black, red, green stripes with a blue triangle and a gold star. It's a perfectly fine flag, but it's a rectangle. The world's newest nation followed the template exactly. I think if South Sudan had proposed a non-rectangular flag, the international reaction would have been not hostile, but puzzled. There would have been questions about practicality, about manufacturing, about whether it would look strange at the UN. The rectangle is so deeply embedded as the visual grammar of statehood that deviating from it reads as unserious.
Like showing up to a diplomatic summit in a really elaborate hat.
It might be a beautiful hat. It might be a culturally significant hat. But everyone else is wearing suits, and the hat becomes the story instead of whatever you came to say.
Nepal gets away with it because they've been doing it since before the rectangle took over.
Because they wrote it into their constitution. The 1962 constitution didn't just describe the flag, it defined it with mathematical precision. That's a statement. It says this shape is not negotiable, not a historical accident, not a temporary design choice. It is as fundamental to the state as the borders on a map.
Let me ask you about the other non-rectangular flags out there, because Nepal isn't entirely alone. Ohio's state flag is a swallowtail burgee.
Adopted in 1902, it's the only non-rectangular U.S. state flag. The swallowtail shape, a rectangle with a triangular notch cut out of the fly end, is a traditional maritime shape derived from naval command flags. Ohio's flag is a nice example of a subnational entity that preserved a non-rectangular tradition, but it's telling that even Ohio's flag is really just a rectangle with a piece cut out. It's not a fundamentally different shape the way Nepal's is.
There are historical examples. The swallow-tailed flags of Scandinavian navies, the long tapering standards of medieval Europe, the square battle flags of some East Asian armies, but they've all either disappeared or been rectangularized.
The trend is unidirectional. Flags converge on rectangles, not the other way around, and I think that tells us something about how standardization works as a historical force. Once a standard is established, it becomes self-reinforcing. Manufacturers optimize for it, designers assume it, institutions require it, and alternatives become progressively more expensive and more difficult to sustain.
What was lost? When flags became rectangles, did any symbolic meaning get sacrificed to practicality?
I think yes, absolutely. The shape of a flag can carry meaning. Nepal's double pennon represents the Himalayas. The long, tapering medieval standard conveyed hierarchy and lineage. The length of the standard often corresponded to the rank of the bearer. The Roman vexillum, hung from a crossbar, was designed to be seen from below, a completely different visual logic than a flag flown from a pole. When you flatten everything into a rectangle, you lose the ability to encode meaning in the shape itself.
It's the same thing that happens with any standardization process. You gain interoperability, and you lose local specificity.
Flags are supposed to be about specificity. That's the whole point. A flag is supposed to say, this is us, not them. But when every flag is the same shape, the shape stops doing any of that work. It becomes invisible background infrastructure, like the fact that almost all paper is A4 or letter size.
Which is interesting, because paper size standardization has a similar history. Military logistics, industrial production, international standards bodies. The rectangle won there too.
It's the same story playing out in different domains. The rectangle is the shape of industrial civilization. It's the most efficient shape for cutting, stacking, storing, and transporting flat materials. It tiles perfectly. It wastes no space. It's the shape that maximizes utility and minimizes cost. Of course, it became the default for flags. The surprising thing isn't that flags are rectangles, it's that we've convinced ourselves this was a symbolic choice rather than a logistical one.
When I see a row of flags outside the UN building, I'm not looking at a gallery of national identities. I'm looking at a monument to supply chain optimization.
You're looking at both. That's the beauty of it. Those flags are simultaneously the most emotionally charged symbols on Earth and the product of centuries of material constraints, manufacturing decisions, and political standardization. The rectangle is the ghost of all those historical forces hiding in plain sight.
Let's talk about the design implications. If someone's listening and they want to design a flag, for a club, an organization, a fictional nation in a novel, whatever, what should they take from all this?
Start with the rectangle. Not because it's better, but because it's the visual language your audience expects. If you design a non-rectangular flag, the shape becomes the entire conversation. People won't see your color choices or your symbolism. They'll see the shape and ask why it's not a rectangle. That can be a powerful choice if you want the shape to carry meaning, but you should make it deliberately, not accidentally.
Breaking the shape convention requires extraordinary symbolic justification. Nepal has that justification. Ohio kind of has it, as a nod to maritime tradition. If you're designing a flag for your book club, you probably don't.
The second thing is to think about the flag as a designed object, not a sacred symbol. The best flags. And I'm thinking of flags like Japan's, Canada's, Switzerland's work, because they're simple enough to be drawn by a child, recognizable at a distance, and distinctive enough not to be confused with other flags. Those are Whitney Smith's principles, and they're useful. Simplicity, meaningful symbolism, limited colors, no text, distinctiveness. Whether you're working with a rectangle or not, those principles hold.
The no-text rule is underrated. If your flag has words on it, you've already failed.
A flag with text is only legible from one direction and requires literacy in a specific language. It's the least universal design choice you can make. But dozens of U.S. state flags do exactly this, and they're almost universally terrible. California's bear flag gets a pass because the bear is doing a lot of visual work, but even that has text.
California's flag is the exception that proves the rule. The bear is so iconic that nobody notices the words.
The third design takeaway, if you're a vexillology enthusiast or just curious, Nepal's 23-step geometric construction is worth studying. It's a masterclass in how to define a non-standard shape with mathematical precision. The 1962 Constitution doesn't just say the flag is two triangles. It specifies the exact construction process, draw a line of length, AB, construct a perpendicular at point C, draw an arc with radius, such and such. It's a flag defined by a geometric proof.
That's the kind of thing that makes me absurdly happy. A national constitution that reads like a geometry textbook.
It means that anyone, anywhere, with a compass and straight edge and the text of the constitution, can construct Nepal's flag exactly. You don't need a digital file or a reference image. You just need the algorithm. That's elegant. And it's a model for how to preserve a non-standard shape against the forces of standardization.
The algorithm as a form of cultural preservation.
And that's the deeper point here. Standardization is powerful and useful, but it's not neutral. Every time we standardize something, a flag shape, a paper size, a screw thread, a measurement system, we're making a choice about whose way of doing things becomes the default. The rectangle didn't win because it's objectively the best flag shape. It won because it was the shape that served the interests of maritime empires, industrial militaries, and global institutions. Nepal's flag is a reminder that other choices were possible, and that preserving those choices requires active effort.
Let's bring this back to the present. We're in a moment where flags are becoming digital as much as physical. Emoji flags, profile picture overlays, virtual flags in games and VR spaces. Does the rectangle persist in that world?
That's the open question I find really compelling. Unicode currently assumes rectangular flag emojis. Every flag emoji renders as a rectangle, even the paws. That's a technical constraint, but it's also a normative one. It tells users that flags are rectangles even when they're not. If the Nepal proposal succeeds and we get a non-rectangular flag emoji, it could open the door for other non-rectangular flags to be represented accurately. Ohio's swallowtail burgee. Maybe historical flags. Maybe fictional flags from games or movies.
The rectangle's monopoly on digital flags might be ending.
It might be. And in virtual reality or gaming environments, there's no material constraint. You don't have to manufacture a flag in VR. You don't have to cut it from fabric or hem it or store it in a ship's locker. The rectangle's logistical advantages disappear. In a fully digital environment, flags could be any shape, animated, three-dimensional, responsive to context. We might see a renaissance of non-rectangular flag design that hasn't been possible since the medieval period.
Or we might see the rectangle persist simply because it's what people expect a flag to look like. The cultural inertia might be stronger than the technological possibility.
That's probably the more likely outcome, honestly. Most people don't think about flag shapes. They think about flag designs. The colors, the symbols, the patterns. The rectangle is invisible. And invisible standards are the hardest ones to change, because nobody notices they're there.
The rectangle is the default setting of the nation-state visual operating system.
Default settings are notoriously sticky. Even when better options exist, most users never change them.
All right, before we wrap, I want to give listeners something practical. The next time you see a flag, any flag, ask yourself two questions. What shape is it, and why that shape? If it's a rectangle, which it almost certainly is, the answer isn't because rectangles are the best shape for flags. The answer is 300 years of maritime power, industrial manufacturing, colonial imposition, and institutional standardization, compressed into a piece of cloth you probably never thought twice about.
If it's Nepal's flag, the answer is a 23-step geometric proof written into a constitution in 1962, encoding Hindu cosmology, dynastic history, and the Himalayas into a shape that refuses to be a rectangle.
Flags are the most visible symbol of the state, but they're also a technology. And like all technologies, they evolve. The rectangle's reign has been long, but it's not eternal.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In pre-Columbian Belize, Quipu record keepers sometimes incorporated fibers from the fur of arboreal mammals into their accounting knots, making the tax records of certain Maya-affiliated settlements literally part sloth.
Right.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop, and thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you left us a review. It helps other people find the show. We'll be back next week with another prompt.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.